At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Waiting for your sign? Here it is. Shop Labor Day appliance deals at Lowe's before they're gone. Get up to 45% off select major appliances. Plus, get free delivery, haul away, installation and parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan on purchases of $999 or more. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/16 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Going through Ken Paxton's full record of ethical improprieties is a full-time job, one, unfortunately, that I have had for the last 10 years.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and this week we're going to take a look deep in the heart of Texas voters. We checked in on this race earlier this summer, but we have a slew of summer polling in, and Democrats still have a puncher's chance in this race. But it's still Texas. So we're going to check in on how 2024 Trump voters who disapprove of his job performance are talking about Ken Paxton and James Tallarico and their options for governor, because unlike in a lot of other states, voters' perceptions of these candidates are really taking root. In Texas, they know who is running. In other states, you can't always say the same. My guest today is Christopher Hooks, former senior editor and contributing writer at the Texas Monthly. Christopher, thanks for being here.
Hey, Sarah, good to be here.
You go for the full Christopher.
Either works.
I can do Chris.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
If I get excited, I might start just calling you Chris. I know we don't know each other, but you know. All right. So you did a conversation with the New York Times. I did this the other day too. And yours was a few months back though about this race. And you tried pretty hard to manage expectations about Texas turning blue, even though you thought James Tallarico could win this race. That is my analysis also. I would agree with that. But then the other day you tweeted, every day the things that need to line up keep lining up. And Tallarico has led most of the polls since June. So tell me, how do you see things lining up?
Well, I think a lot of people in Texas have been waiting for this avalanche of money and national effort that people have been expecting to descend on Texas at some point to back up Ken Paxton. But there seems to be this rift between the Republicans in the Senate and the Trump campaign about who's going to fund this effort. That's something that you would need to see if Tallarico was going to continue to have a chance. I think there's a sense in which National Democrats and National Republicans alike have not really wanted for Texas to become a competitive state because it's so extraordinarily expensive to campaign here. And it seems like National Republicans are anxious about engaging and trying to win a race here when there are so many other winnable races elsewhere.
Is it because they think like, look, you know, we're going to win and so we're not going to spend money on this race? Or is it that, or are they like, Ken Paxton actually kind of sucks and we're just going to hang him out to dry? Or is it really that there's just a fight over who should pay for it? Because MAGA Inc. has this big war chest that they seem to not be spending on anything. If Republicans lose federal race in Texas, that is a political earthquake of epic proportions. Democrats have been dying for this to happen since Beto was jumping up on the counters. What are the internal machinations for why Republicans aren't coming in and spending big?
You know, when I talk to Texas Republicans, they have a number of different attitudes about it. I think what Ken Paxton is telling conservative voters right now is that if the Democrats get in this election, like the Democrats are going to win forever here and it's going to be a blue state and there's no coming back. But I think a lot of Republicans have the sense that if Ken Paxton loses this, it's because Ken Paxton sucks, pardon my language. And it's not necessarily something that's going to permanently derail the Republican coalition here. In private, there are Texas Republicans have always had a lot of misgivings about this character. And there's a lot of misgivings nationally, as you know, about how the primary ended. Ken Paxton was probably going to win this runoff. But the way Trump got involved at the last minute is something that has left a lot of bad feeling here in private. And, it was my assumption that they were going to work this out eventually, and it just doesn't seem like they are. And we're about 45 days away from the start of early voting. They're kind of running out of time.
Yeah, if you don't have money coming in, like ready to go to hit the ground running after Labor Day, that's a big signal, because you're not going to start dropping money a month out in Texas. It seems like if they're not going to start immediately after Labor Day, that it probably isn't coming, right? The cavalry's not coming.
Yeah. And as you know, there's a huge opportunity cost to pouring money in here. I mean, this is apart from California, the most expensive state to campaign in. It's difficult. It requires a lot of resources. And in a climate where, you know, you can choose to invest in Maine or other states like this, they may need to defend Iowa. There's a lot of investments that just seem like a better use of their time and money.
Okay, so let's listen to some voters. Like I said, we convened another group of 2024 Trump voters who disapprove of his job performance for this show. We had done a similar group earlier in primary season, but we wanted to see, now that the race is just a little more settled and these guys have been running against each other, Paxton and Tallarico, for a little bit, see how these Trump disapprovers, many of whom, or at least some of whom, a chunk of whom, Tallarico is going to have to win over. Let's see how they were feeling first about Ken Paxton. Let's listen.
I don't like the guy. I mean, he's been indicted for securities fraud. He's also been linked to investments and companies. He's awarded contracts to, I believe that was a camera company that installed cameras, I think, all over the state. I don't think his credibility is there to be a senator. I mean, I would definitely not vote for him.
I don't recall exactly what one of the issues was about, something about house renovation potentially with him and his wife getting a vendor. I don't know, somebody that was his friend, and they said he used some campaign money for that. To me, I mean, I'm not saying this is okay, but politicians are very dirty, corrupt, and look at government right now. We have some of the worst in there now. So to me, I think he was a fighter for our border. He fought against the Biden administration on a lot of good things.
I think he's a full-blown crook who's right in line with Trump as far as not being able to tell the truth. But working in commercial real estate in Texas, he tried to hide some stuff with Nate Paul, who was a local person who is, the FBI shut him down. He's been in prison because of it. I mean, he tried to hide that. We just keep going down there saying, we want to reelect you. So this particular time, I won't be reelecting him anymore, because it's to the point we are so conditioned, when a person lies, we're just going to let it go. But if there's one little thing a person does in their personality, this is a cancel culture. You're out of here. You're gone. But we'll get the people who run our lives. We'll sign them right back up for the job.
I am so turned off by Ken Paxton. I don't know that I can vote for Tallarico, who I think is a very attractive guy. You know, a hardworking guy who loves God and country and his family and all that sort of stuff. But I just can't agree with Tallarico on so many issues. I really don't know what I'm going to do with this election.
It's not about anymore the guy that's really good, because Paxton is a bad guy. The last thing I heard was him pardoning his buddy that was a child molester. That one did not sit well with me. But who is the lesser of two evils? That's kind of where we're all at today in most of these elections.
Who's the least less evil, or going to help the people the most? I mean, I guess it's a controversial topic, and it's Republican run, so Texas is one of the last. But as far as the THC and whatnot, now they're going backwards on all of that. I'm just trying to say something that everybody else hasn't said. But he's getting paid buku bucks to be the sheep or the puppet for the alcohol lobbyists. You know, as far as that goes, I think in the past I have voted for him. It's kind of like Trump. We got to get somebody else in there. I don't think he's the best. If that's the best we can do, I mean, does it really even matter? I mean, we're just going, it's like a toilet bowl flushing. We're going down, down, down. That's what it seemed like.
National Republicans are not hiding that Paxton is an albatross around their necks. John Cornyn is saying he's lazy and doesn't campaign. And John Kennedy's saying there's a real race in Texas. So you wrote a piece that was headlined, "Ken Paxton Now Has to Do the Unthinkable. Try." That's a great headline. So I take it you concur with John Cornyn's assessment. Tell me about Ken Paxton's work ethic, because I got to say, the voters seem pretty well aware of his corruption.
I covered the Texas legislature for a long time, since 2011, and Ken Paxton is this very recognizable type of guy at the Texas legislature. They're probably in every state legislature, but I think they're worse in Texas, where he's a guy who comes from a boomtown suburb, and he's kind of, he gets a little taste of people recognizing him and the connections that he can get. And he becomes kind of a wheeler dealer, and he makes a lot of money on the side, and he cuts deals for his friends' companies. And there's a lot of little stuff that crosses the line, but nobody holds him accountable for it. And then it kind of grows over time. And over the last 20 years, it's grown. And, you know, the New York Times has reported he owns 15 properties. His family has made many millions of dollars since he's become Texas Attorney General, which isn't a post that you should be making a lot of money in. So anybody who hangs around the legislature has seen this guy, recognizes this guy. His political skill over the years, and which enabled him to become the Attorney General of the state of Texas, is an adeptness at handling interfactional Republican politics in Texas. So very early on in his career, he sort of aligned himself with a powerful and wealthy faction in the Republican Party, which at the time was trying to take out the Speaker of the House, Joe Strauss. That's all ancient history, but he sort of became aligned with these people who had an infinite amount of money for him and who had things they wanted him to do. And that allowed him to raise himself from the state Senate to the Attorney General of Texas, an important position, obviously.
This show is sponsored by Lisa. I've made a lot of upgrades for my health in recent years. I got some new tracking tech, some fitness equipment, a personal trainer, you know, things designed to improve my daily life. But none of them have had the impact of my Sapira Chill mattress from Lisa. I am a hot sleeper. I just am. And I'm also a middle-aged woman. And so I like a cooling mattress. And now I wake up well-rested, comfortable, ready for the day, ready to podcast five times in a row and go on a book tour. It has genuinely improved my quality of life in a way that I wasn't expecting. Lisa has a lineup of beautifully crafted mattresses tailored to how you sleep. Each mattress is designed with specific sleep positions and feel preferences in mind. From night one, you'll feel the difference. Premium materials that deliver serious comfort and full body support, no matter how you sleep. Just take the Lisa sleep quiz and you'll find your perfect match in 2 minutes or less. Lisa mattresses are meticulously designed and assembled in the USA for exceptional quality, and they back it up with free shipping, easy returns, and a 120-night sleep trial. Lisa has been awarded Best Hybrid and Best Memory Foam Mattresses by the New York Times Wirecutter magazine and is featured by West Elm as their go-to mattress partner. Go to Lisa.com for 30% off select mattresses during their Labor Day sale, plus get an extra $50 off with promo code FOCUSGROUP, exclusive for my listeners. That's Leesa.com, promo code focus group, for 30% off select mattresses during their Labor Day sale, plus an extra $50 off. You got to support our show and let them know that we're the ones who sent you in the survey after checkout. So that is Lisa with two E's.com, promo code focus group.
In all of that time, he never had reason to become good at campaigning or to try to contest a general election. He just never had to do that. So over the years, I've seen him give a few stump speeches and appear at a few rallies, and he wasn't very good, and he didn't have any reason to get better because the only thing that he needed to advance in his position was like things that were happening behind the scenes. So he ran for Senate because he hates John Cornyn, and he holds grudges for a long time. And he succeeded in taking out John Cornyn. And it almost seems like having taken out John Cornyn, he's accomplished the thing that he really wants to do. And it doesn't seem like he's really wants to be a senator. I'm sure he thinks he does. But he's been slow to get out there and campaign, and the Republicans have been loud about that. And when he does show up and he gives a speech, he's always outshone by the people introducing him at these rallies. And it's just clear that he doesn't really know how to do this and doesn't have those skills in his heart. At the same time, I think the Tallarico campaign has a problem that Texas media has had for a long time, which is when you try to introduce this character, what you're trying to communicate to people is like 20 years of minor and then growing incidents of corruption and unethical behavior. And it's not really a case that any one thing is a knockout, but it is the case that over 20 years, his audaciousness has grown, and he's been consistently disloyal to the people around him who he had faith with at one point. including his wife. I mean, I think that his wife was, as a state senator, sort of a business partner of Paxton Inc. You know, it's one thing for a marriage to fall apart. I think voters can find that, can understand that, but, they were a package deal, and he broke faith with her in the way that he breaks faith with all of his business partners and political partners. It's interesting listening to the focus group. I mean, many people know kind of parts of his record, and maybe they don't know it exactly right. And the political challenge for the Tallarico campaign or anyone running against him is to kind of like paint an accurate overall portrait of this man, knowing that most voters are probably not going to go through the full record, because going through Ken Paxton's full record of ethical improprieties is a full-time job. One, unfortunately, that I have had for the last 10 years.
And I know enough about Ken Paxton scandals to know that several of those voters didn't quite have it right. Like, they don't know the whole scandal. But I'm not sure they need to know the ins and outs of the scandal, which I actually think is a good thing. It's like, nah, this guy's a crook. Right. You heard people say, like, I can't give you all the details about how he's a crook, but like, dude's a crook. Dude, you can't trust him.
I think it's more Texas voters than I thought, given that he's been reelected three times as attorney general, seem like they're kind of picking up on the Ken Paxton story. And that's reflected in conversations that I have around the state. You know, it was interesting to hear from one of your focus group members, you know, this idea you sort of want a politician who's a little bit of a crook standing up for you, like, that's what politicians do. And, you know, I think a message that the Tallarico campaign can't use, but that I've heard some conservatives grumble about over the years, and I think is true, is that, like, he has not been very good at standing up for conservatives in Texas. Like, if you're a movement conservative, you should want the Attorney General of Texas to be a powerhouse office who knows what they're doing and has the ship running well, and all of this stuff, and winning cases at the Supreme Court. And Ken Paxton has notched like a few of those victories, which I heard members of your focus group talk about. But on the whole, he's just like not been very good at the day-to-day running of this office. You know, I've heard more than one conservative and more than one Democrat make this in opposite directions. But like, Democrats should have wanted him to stay as the Attorney General in Texas, because he, like, frankly, wasn't very good at it. And I've heard more than one Republican who doesn't like Ken Paxton say that as long as he's out of the state, we're better off.
Interesting. Okay. Well, speaking of Tallarico, let's listen to how these voters talked about Tallarico, because you did hear some voters in that last group say, I'm not voting for Ken Paxton. So then the question becomes, are you sitting out, or are you going to vote for the other guy, the Democrat? Let's listen.
I was actually talking about this the other day with somebody. This is the first time I've seen a politician do commercials in a very long time that he is not attacking the competition. He is stating, you know, I was a teacher, this is what I want to do. And I find that admirable. I don't know enough about him to say he's perfect, but he might be the lesser of two evils in this situation. He seems like just a nice guy that is trying to do right, I hope.
On the surface, a very attractive candidate. He's articulate. He's smart. You know, he graduated from college and he did Teach for America. That is terrific. What a great thing to do. He has, by my understanding, a good track record in the Texas legislature. Kathleen said, I've enjoyed seeing his commercials. He acts like a gentleman. In my view, he's almost somewhat kind of Obama-like. Very attractive guy. I think that Obama and Tallarico are probably the same in that they view the answer to any problem being more government as opposed to less government, more taxes as opposed to less taxes, more regulation as opposed to less regulation. And that's just something that I don't agree with from a policy standpoint.
I initially liked some of the stuff that I saw in bits and pieces, but I firmly want to bring back Christian beliefs as being something that people need to put in their everyday value system, because it's missing. And he's looks wonderful on tape and everything. He opposes putting the Ten Commandments and stuff back in. And there's just, that is missing from the political world. We need that right and wrong barometer that's there. And so for him, he says the right thing on a soundbite for a commercial, but that party comes with him when he gets elected. And I don't have benefits, and that's what makes me angry. And I feel like the other party just gives them away, like popcorn at a movie theater.
He's a nice guy. I think he, he's a nice guy, but I just cannot agree with his politics. And he's a little further left than some of the more moderate Democrats. And so I just worry about with him getting in there, who he's going to align himself with and, you know, go after certain things that we fought hard to keep or fought hard to get.
Rico is a great candidate on paper. Somebody mentioning, you know, the lesser of two evils. We don't know what he's actually going to do in office. Like we did with Trump, we're going to fall for a bunch of promises that may not be fulfilled. I like the fact that he grew up in, middle economy. He became a teacher. That's pretty admirable. I mean, teachers don't get paid much. I mean, great candidate on paper. But I'm sort of leaning towards, you know, let's see what happens.
I really like what he has to say. I like the corruption that he's exposed in what was happening with education in Texas, especially with the law that was passed about the vouchers in the spring that really benefited students who wanted to go into private school. So I really liked how he discussed that in detail. He brought to light what was happening. I like how he has the middle class background. I like the fact that he's not of retirement age already. And given the choice between him and Paxton, I will vote for Tyler Rico.
There was one interview he had on a podcast where somebody said, "So what's the first thing you think about when you think about something?" And he goes, "You know, I think about the trans kids." And it was just like, wait, where did that even come from? What are you talking about? And then his answer was so wimpy after that. And then he was just like, he's soft. He just doesn't come across as a, he's too soft for me. And his policies are definitely, as far as more government and more interfering in your life, more regulations, more things like that. That's just, he seems like that kind of guy. Plus, there was another video he's also on where he says there's six different genders. I think that stuff's really weird and it's just not reality.
It's a mark against him because of that. Because as far as I'm concerned, there's two genders. And that's the way it has always been. And now we have all these people saying, "Well, I'm this, I'm that." Just not good. And I don't like it. And him saying that there's six genders, I don't even know where he gets that from.
I do think that there's some potential there, but there's that risk. I raise my kids up, you know, reading the Bible and everything. But it's like, I also believe that it shouldn't be something that's forced upon people, you know? But then it's like, it's the other extreme where like there's stuff that I believe in that shouldn't be allowed in schools. Like, I mean, you know, like where like, you know, transgender kids, you know, can be going to like girls restrooms or boy restrooms, you know, vice versa, where I'm like, I don't know if that's a line that's going to be crossed, you know, because, you know, he's wanting to appease to everybody.
Okay.
Do we all need to be detoxing ourselves?
Before I go asking, how can I detox? I have to look inward. Okay, what am I doing? Can I identify at least three ways that my body detoxes and ways to support that? I promise if my message was more dramatic like that, I would have millions of followers and make millions of dollars. But I cannot sleep at night trying to sell someone something that their body already does naturally.
We're living in a crazy world now. I think it's a lot of people fear a lack of control. And as a result of this, this is the way of them trying to make sense of the world and try to take control over their own bodies. So by actively doing something, I'm going to detoxify things, therefore I'm going to feel better, I think is absolutely one of the reasons that, detoxifying has become so popular.
Listen to the full episode of Health vs. Hype with the American Medical Association on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes.
or how about fresh dough stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
So take this with a grain of salt, but when we ask people to make sort of a knee-jerk reaction, just give us your gut, it was 5 for Tallarico and 3 for Paxton, and one person who really refused to make up her mind. Sometimes you're like, no, you have to do it. And people still say, I absolutely will not do it. And I just want to add, after that conversation, we did a much deeper dive with this group on the TV ads that have been running in this race about a lot of Tallarico's sort of woke one comments, the six genders, God is not binary, which is clearly sunk in with these voters about him. And that is what a lot of the ads against Tallarico, that's what's been running in this race. And if you're interested, go become a Bulwark Plus member so you can get our focus group newsletter, because I'm going to do a much deeper dive on that. But here's my question for you, Christopher. You lived through Beto O'Rourke's 2018 race, which is the last time Democrats even sniffed at a statewide election in Texas. So what is Tallarico doing better or worse in this race?
I guess we'll see if it's better or worse. But Beto O'Rourke ran this kind of freewheeling campaign that didn't seem like it had a lot of planning behind it in a way that kind of ended up helping it. But he live streamed a lot of his campaign stops and him on the road. And if you wanted to be watching him for the better part of most days, you could, it seemed like sometimes, you know, when somebody would come up and ask him, I don't think Colin Kaepernick should be kneeling. He would say, I understand why Colin Kaepernick is kneeling in essence, which was a ridiculous thing to do in Texas in 2018. And yet at the end of the day, you know, something like 400,000 people voted for Greg Abbott and then Beto O'Rourke, because on some level he coded as moderate or pragmatic or real or authentic or some combination of the four in a way that appealed to a lot of nominally Republican voters. Tallarico's approach is very, very different. He reminds me at times of Pete Buttigieg. He's somebody who has like a really intense media training and message discipline, at least these days. Obviously, he's dogged by these comments that he made in Woke One, as you say. But these days, he's trying to stay focused for the most part. And frankly, I'm surprised that your focus group is as positive as they are on him. I have a hard time judging how this stuff is sinking in. The campaign, the ads that the Paxton campaign is running, and all of this stuff. I did go on the trail with the Tallarico campaign a couple of weeks ago. And I talked to a few people who said that they had not voted for Democrats before now and planned to do so this time. There have been some polls that suggest that, a substantial number of voters that voted for Donald Trump in one or several recent elections are likely to vote for him. That's very encouraging. A stray thread there that I wanted to mention is one of your focus group participants mentioned the voucher program that passed in Texas a few years ago. And there was a lot of discontent about that among rural Republicans. Rural Republicans in Texas provide this huge well of votes to the Republican Party that offsets the losses that they've sustained in cities and suburbs in recent years. And the Democratic goal obviously has never been to win rural voters outright, but to lessen the margin that Republicans get in rural counties. And there's kind of a combination of stuff that seems to have caused rural conservatives to be very upset about the status quo this election cycle. And I wouldn't venture a guess as to how it plays out, but part of that is the voucher program. Rural communities in Texas are very dependent on public schools. And the state of Texas allocated a bunch of money to private schools that are mostly in big cities and suburban counties, for which rural Republicans don't benefit at all. There was really a lot of anger in rural conservative areas about that. The THC ban, which came up as well, is something that's angered a lot of people. But I've heard, I keep hearing about that. And in rural communities, flock cameras is kind of a meme issue of the moment, but there's a lot of anger about that. And
we're going to get to the flock cameras because that came up.
Data centers, obviously, like there's a lot of anger among farmers and people in rural communities about that issue. And that's something that the Republican Party in Texas has kind of struggled to figure out what its position is. The governor, Greg Abbott, has kind of delayed trying to delay the conversation until after the election. But I have not heard a lot of people who have accepted that at face value. And so there are some, you know, I think if Tallarico can do just a couple points better in rural areas than Beto O'Rourke did in 2018, that would be a huge help. Obviously, this emphasizing the woke one stuff is a good defense to that. But there are a lot of material issues in front of voters right now.
I listen to focus groups, obviously, in lots of places. It is so interesting to me that I always think it's a tough thing for the Republican candidate when sort of the trans stuff is all there is. Like the woke one stuff is bad. It does. It, you know, her saying too soft. That stuff is hard, plays hard in Texas. But also what I heard from those voters is that everybody thinks Tallarico's a nice guy. And they all think Ken Paxton's a crook. Now, their overall political polarized sort of views on things can overwhelm that. But there's a lot of people who are like, I don't know, lesser of two evils, which, by the way, on this show, if we played a drinking game, any episode where we're talking about two candidates where you had to drink every time some voter said that their choice was between the lesser of two evils, we'd all be dead all the time because people say it always. And so when they're thinking about the lesser of two evils, and it feels like the only thing they have on Tallarico is previous comments about some of the trans stuff. No doubt that that's going to matter to a lot of people in Texas. But listening to these voters, there's just part of me that said, I don't know. It feels like he could get people there. Let's put a pin in the Paxton Tallarico because you brought up Greg Abbott, and we've got a bunch of sound on Greg Abbott that I want to play because he is running for a fourth term, and it's not gotten as much attention as the Senate race. And Abbott, you know, looks likely to hang on, but not certain. Like, suddenly, we're all like, I don't know, is Abbott in trouble? In the two Trump disapprover groups we've done, one in June and one in August, like, a lot of people were just really lukewarm at best on Abbott. And there's also some just, like, incumbent fatigue setting in. So let's listen to how these voters from both those groups talked about Abbott, and then we'll talk about it on the other side.
I think the main thing that I think of with Abbott, I have mixed feelings about how he's working with schools and the school choice. I think he's done a pretty decent job on the border. I don't know a whole bunch. I think my main concern is it really seems like a good old boys club. They've been in office a long time, and it seems like there's a lot of very wealthy people who all have each other's backs and are all getting pretty rich and are riding the coattails of MAGA. And that just kind of gives me the ick.
I'm not a big fan of Hot Wheels, to be honest. Sorry. That's what he called him. So he's trying to just, you know, suck up. But I guess it comes to, I haven't even researched the other candidate at all, so I'm in no position to say, you know, anything.
The one thing that comes to mind immediately is, like, a couple months ago, the whole marijuana thing shut down that happened in Texas. Like, it was just an immediate, you know, we're shutting this thing down. Don't care to be educated on it. Don't care what anybody thinks about it. It's dead.
I was a strong opponent of vouchers for the education system because one of the main arguments was being made. I mean, $10,000 is not going to do anything for me if I want to send my kid to a $30,000 a year school. If I can already afford that $30,000 a year school, you're giving me a discount. That's all you're doing. I think Abbott is trying to do more for the wealthy and not for the middle class. I mean, it's kind of like Stacey said, screwing everybody else and helping out the 1%. Just kind of like what Trump, and he's a Trump ally.
I don't agree with all, everything he does, but it's like Paxton. You can tell Paxton is a bad con man, whatever. Greg Abbott actually seems like a pretty nice guy.
I think he's a good candidate. And I think unlike the governor of California or the governor of Illinois, who are going to run for president, where their states have very bad track records of economic growth and that sort of thing. You know, Paxton has been very successful in attracting business to Texas, and Texas is doing very well relative to a lot of parts of the country.
I think he has a point of view and he sticks to it and he fights for what he wants in place. And I like that about him. I would continue to vote for him.
I think he, you know, has the best intentions for the state. You know, he's gone out and bought the national government at times. One thing that comes to mind is when he was putting those barriers in the Rio Grande River. So I think he has our best interest at heart. But on the flip side of that, he's kind of a yes man to Trump.
I've got a couple of people that I've talked to that one of his biggest donors is a wealthy Muslim guy. And then I know people in Dallas and Ennis and around that area, they've got the largest Muslim population coming and a lot of mosques coming in. I know, or what I've been told or brainwashed about is you don't really want that trying to come in and take over Texas like it's kind of done in New York and Minnesota and some of the Detroit or Michigan. So I know that he's kind of in bed with some of that, but now I hear he's kicking back on some of that foot washing stuff. I'm just, if you come to somebody else's country, you acclimate or change your views or play with others instead of just try to change the way that that country does things. That's, I don't really like that.
Do we all need to be detoxing ourselves?
Before I go asking, how can I detox? I have to look inward. Okay, what am I doing? Can I identify at least 3 ways that my body detoxes and ways to support that? I promise if my message was more dramatic like that, I would have millions of followers and make millions of dollars. But I cannot sleep at night trying to sell someone something that their body already does naturally.
We're living in a crazy world now. I think it's a lot of people fear a lack of control. And as a result of this, this is the way of them trying to make sense of the world and try to take control over their own bodies. So by actively doing something, I'm going to detoxify things, therefore I'm going to feel better, I think is absolutely one of the reasons that it, you know, detoxifying has become so popular.
Listen to the full episode of Health vs. Hype with the American Medical Association on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of new items, like Honeycrisp apples for $2.99 a pound and boneless, skinless chicken breasts for just $3.99 a pound. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through November 4th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
That last gentleman was pretty Tucker-pilled, if you listen to him and the whole group. He was very focused the whole time on Muslim immigration into Texas, very much does not care for it. What is he talking about? Because it was a flashpoint in the Republican primary earlier this year, too. I heard a lot of voters talking about it. Is it? And I remember asking in that back then, like, is this a huge issue that a lot, because it comes up?
You know, one of the things about being governor for 12 years is that at the end of that 12 years, anything that people are angry about is sort of a result of stuff that has happened while you're, and there's not really a way to get around that. I think beyond Greg Abbott, there has been sort of a shift in Texas politics in the last decade or two where, you know, Rick Perry or Greg Abbott early in his term whenever they needed to get reelected, they would just talk about how Texas had grown so much and people were moving here every day. And they would quote the prices of U-Hauls on their way to Texas. And it was something that Texas politicians and Texas generally were very proud about. I think a lot of, to tie the Muslim stuff and data centers and everything else together, a lot of what people are angry about in Texas right now is the consequences of Texas moving to the center of the global economy and becoming a much bigger, wealthier place. And that's ground that is can be tricky for Republican politicians, especially of an older generation, to manage because it's not quite the conversation that they're used to. So the Muslim thing, he was talking about the foot washing stations. The governor took action to prevent Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, one of the largest airports in the world, from using their own money to install a foot washing station for. And I assume that this would probably have been mostly used by like Etihad business travelers. This is like an international airport and it's Texas. So people are coming from, because of oil and everything else, coming from the Middle East all the time. And this was like an amenity for them. Greg Abbott took kind of extraordinary action to make them stop it and threaten their public funding. And there was one kind of data point in this long running fight that he's trying to prove that he's doing something about the quote unquote Muslim infiltration of North Texas, which, as you say, has kind of emerged recently. One interesting thing that you saw this year is a kind of a younger generation of Republican politicians is coming up under these guys who have been here for 12 years, like Greg Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. One of them is running for a seat on the Railroad Commission, Beau French. And the Railroad Commission in Texas governs the oil and gas industry. So it's actually in this enormously important regulatory position. And Beau French ran his campaign entirely on like deporting everyone who came after the Hartzeller Immigration Act. And he's running this, he ran this weird campaign with weird rhetoric that felt new in Texas. But voters really responded to that.
And when you say weird rhetoric, do you just mean anti-Muslim rhetoric?
Well, anti-Muslim rhetoric, anti-South Asian, anti-Indian, it sounds like I'm being hyperbolic, but really kind of like anti-brown people in the United States.
Sure.
And one of the things he was saying, you know, he said, remarked upon a couple times that like Texas is becoming like Rhodesia and we need to prevent it from becoming going the way of Rhodesia. And that's just not rhetoric. You would have heard from any Republican politician, obviously like 5 or 10 years ago, but it's not even rhetoric that I had heard very much from like the craziest grassroots, like base activists in the conservative party that I've been following for years. And this guy won the Republican primary and he's going to win a statewide election here. And looking forward in Texas, you know, whether or not the Democrat wins, I'm really interested and pretty apprehensive about the fact that aspiring Republican statewide candidates are going to look at the Beau French campaign and say, well, this has to be what my campaign is. This is the future of conservative politics here. Voters more and more are asking for state leaders to say something or just posture against the fact that Texas is becoming a lot more diverse as a consequence of it becoming a lot richer. And so I think Republican politics here is going to get pretty weird over the next decade compared to what it was in, you know, the Rick Perry, early Greg Abbott administration.
Yeah, well, you know, there's another Republican politician who figured out that there was gold in the hills of saying, let's ban Muslims. And that was Donald Trump. It's not that new. And you know, this was one of those moments, right, where I remember when Donald Trump first started, it was like, it's a Muslim ban, a ban on a religion. And this was back in the days when I was like, well, you can't say that. No one's going to tolerate that. Turns out, not only do people tolerate it, but many Republicans said, ah, yes, this is the one we've been waiting for. What are the vulnerabilities does Abbott have? I guess the incumbency is one of them. And he's apparently, I didn't know that they'd banned THC, but I could see how for people who were into that, that could be very annoying, like the kind of single issue that suddenly is like, get this guy out of here. Are there other vulnerabilities, though, with Greg Abbott that a lot of voters tell you?
Well, I have to say on the THC thing, I mean, the real story is so ridiculous. They legalized THC on accident. The legislature fully did not intend to. But because they created this program.
They didn't realize it was weed or what?
they created this program to sell hemp products. And so you could take hemp with a tiny amount of THC in it and then concentrate it. And you could sell stuff that was very strong in Texas shot suddenly. And it was completely unregulated. I mean, it was the kind of, if a business had made this series of decisions, like they would have fired everyone. It was the most absurd thing I've ever covered, probably. And then 2 years down the road, of course, they didn't say, we screwed this up royally, guys. We're sorry. They came back with some clarifying language, and they fought a war about it in the legislature. And Greg Abbott was cross-pressured. The Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who is a Christian conservative and has very strong views about these things, wanted to ban THC again totally. And Greg Abbott, you got a lot of people telling him, don't do this. This is politically a disaster. Like, people are pretty in favor of this stuff. And they ended up kind of half banning some of it and not taking action on other stuff. But it was a solution that infuriated everyone. And I think I was slow to realize how angry people were about it, including a lot of Republican voters, conservative voters. So, yeah, there is a lot of ambient anger about that. And it kind of goes across party lines. You know, we've talked about it a little bit, but the voucher thing has had a lot of consequences and people are very upset about it. Flock cameras. I mean, Greg Abbott is sort of directly responsible for bringing flock cameras into the state. And so now he has to kind of pretend to be like, figure out a way to oppose them. And like, he opposed them all along.
I want to talk about the data centers and flock cameras. Cause this did come up a bunch. All right. I want to play one more clump of audio because it's not about Gina Hinojosa, Abbott's Democratic opponent, but about a couple of issues that she's trying to use as a wedge issue in this race, which are data centers and flock cameras. So I'm just going to explain what flock cameras are, and I'm going to explain it because I had my producer explain it to me first, and now I know. But they are these AI-powered cameras used by law enforcement that are logging every license plate that passes by into a searchable database rather than just vehicles who trip the cameras because of speeding or running a red light. And so Abbott has had to make a bit of an election year about face on this. Both because there was like on state funding for flock cameras and data center construction supporting temporary pauses on both. And so let's listen to how the voters talked about both of these issues.
It's getting really scary with all the flock cameras, the data centers, and we're told to just basically let them eat cake. I mean, we're supposed to like it. They're going to bring money to the economy, jobs. I don't really care about that if I'm not going to have any privacy in the near future, which is going to happen. I mean, I feel I'm really nervous about data centers. I don't think they're telling us the truth about everything that's going on with those and flock cameras and all the surveillance and the Palantir and all of that. It's pretty scary.
Abbott did put a pause on data centers, and the issues that he wanted resolved were energy and water usage. I thought that was totally appropriate. And yet at the same time, he said that, you know, Texas should be a leader in data center development. And I agree with that. So long as the issues of energy and water are addressed. And I think they will be going forward.
What kind of confuses me is a lot of people that are wanting less government, therefore the flock cameras and the more surveillance as far as that goes. It's kind of like the commercials we saw. It doesn't align with me. Google's been tracking searches. Home Depot's under a lawsuit now that they've been filming license plates and faces for years. And I mean, they've been supposedly filming in your TV, at your house or what have you, Vizio and some of the different ones. That's invasion of privacy. I mean, you might catch some bad guys. Yeah, I'm for that. But I mean, as far as even if I'm not doing anything wrong, if I'm watching a movie or doing something in my room with my girlfriend or wife or significant other or not doing a damn thing, they don't need to be watching unless they got a warrant to do so, as far as that goes. I mean, people are always going to abuse the laws.
We were sold on the idea that, oh, you know, these are just for in-house. Your information is not being stored. And just recently we found out that these cameras have facial recognition. They track your license plate, and they can track your movements throughout the whole city, sometimes throughout the whole state.
Your spending, your purchases, everything.
Yeah, so you were sold on an idea that it's for your safety, but it's actually a double-sided weapon where it's going to come back and it could potentially hurt you.
I want to move back to Mayberry. All of this new technology, all of this is just overwhelming. And I can't believe this is where we are in this day and age. Our parents, my parents that are gone, would never believe it.
Do we all need to be detoxing ourselves?
Before I go asking, how can I detox? I have to look inward. Okay, what am I doing? Can I identify at least 3 ways that my body detoxes and ways to support that? I promise if my message was more dramatic like that, I would have millions of followers and make millions of dollars. But I cannot sleep at night trying to sell someone something that their body already does naturally.
We're living in a crazy world now. I think it's a lot of people fear a lack of control. And as a result of this, this is the way of them trying to make sense of the world and try to take control over their own bodies. So by actively doing something, I'm going to detoxify things, therefore I'm going to feel better, I think is absolutely one of the reasons that detoxifying has become so popular.
Listen to the full episode of Health vs. Hype with the American Medical Association on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
You've raised this, and it is right. These voters were all over this. They were really upset about the flock cameras. I'll tell you what, I'm going to immediately find out if they're trying to do that where I live, because I would also be outraged by this. But I'm most interested in this as a wedge issue for Democrats, because the people who are most animated about this are at the ends of the horseshoe. And the way a lot of these Trump disapprovers are, Tucker Carlson, for example, is somebody who's also made a huge deal out of the flock cameras and is really against them. What do you think people are mad about when it comes to data centers or flock?
I found myself agreeing with the last woman who was speaking. I would like to move back to Mayberry, too. I think there is just a lot of kind of mixed up apprehension and fear about these new technologies and their consequences. And it's privacy, and it's also the environment, and also, Sam Altman out there saying he's going to end the world. And also this awareness people have that a lot of layoffs are coming, and that maybe that's going to close the route to prosperity in the future. And I think the voters are correct to be concerned about all of these things personally. I think they're correct to worry about the consequences of these new technologies. And I think that concern is popping up in the avenues that are presented to people. So maybe they read something about water use, and water use is a big issue here. There are big cities that are running out of water, or maybe it's their electricity costs, or maybe it's surveillance through flock cameras, which has always been a big issue here. Red light cameras were a big political issue here for years. And there's something even more abstract than that at this moment, where we all feel like something is changing and maybe not for the better. If you're Greg Abbott, this is a tough thing to deal with, because the Texas economy has always been based on limitless growth and letting people build whatever they want, and that's had a lot of good consequences. But this is an issue where there's a political cost to that. And I talked to the Republican Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller the other day, who has been loud on some of this stuff, flock cameras and data centers. He's coming from it mostly from the perspective of protecting farmland. But, I talked about with him, he and Greg Abbott have not had a great relationship. And he was commenting on the absurdity of this. Greg Abbott's, moratorium on data centers, if you want to call it a moratorium, like ends mid-November. It's like the most ridiculous thing. And the legislature convenes in January and it meets for 6 months. So what he was saying was you could very easily have that moratorium to the end of the legislature and just let the people's elected officials deal with it. But that's clearly not the plan. I think voters would be right to suspect the moratorium is going to end the week after the election. And there's going to be a couple months where the data center guys can get going, and everybody, they can flood the legislature with their political donations and figure and work out a compromise that's beneficial to the companies and the people who want to build, because Greg Abbott has gotten a lot of money from these people, as Sid Miller was keen to point out. Is it a wedge issue? I think that's a good, I don't know. I sense a sort of, the anger about this in Texas is pretty widespread and coming from some, corners. I don't think it's exclusively a horseshoe thing. Yeah, I have no sense for how good of an issue this is for Gina Hinojosa. You know, she's not somebody who has a lot of name recognition. I don't think people know much about her. She's a smart and capable campaigner and legislator. But, you know, I think most observers of politics in Texas are much more skeptical of the polls that have her within range of Greg Abbott than they are of the Tallarico polls. They could be completely wrong, but.
Well, I mean, I guess my question is this, is that Tallarico, because it looks like he could at minimum outperform what Democrats have done previously, and because you do hear, I mean, the thing that jumps out at me listening to these now, and I want to just restate here as we wrap up that these are people who are disgruntled with Trump, right? They voted for him, but when we screened for it, we were looking for Trump disapprovers because we want to hear about how people who are swingier, who are maybe like, I'm mad at Trump, I'm mad at Abbott, I'm mad at Ken Paxton, I don't really like him. Would they vote for a Democrat? Because I'll tell you, one of the big lessons for me of focus groups all these years is knowing that just because voters are really bad, Republican voters are really mad at Republicans, does not always translate to votes for Democrats. In Tallarico's case, though, they're pretty open to him, and he's high profile enough and has either had enough money or enough just juice in general that people know who he is. Her much less so. And my question is in this last 2 months, when people hear focus groups sound like that around Abbott, is there not an opening? Is there not a world in which Democrats say, I don't know, guys, we could get close in this, or we could, she could, and I just, you know, there's an ad going around right now where she talks about losing a baby, but carrying it to term, despite knowing that the baby girl wasn't going to make it. It's a very effective ad. I think for me, I watched that and I think this is an ad that understands that for a lot of people, even though she might be as a policy matter, she's pro-choice, but she's saying, but I'm pro-life myself. Like I choose life, which I think sort of plays. And if you wrap that together with data centers and the flock cameras, is there not a world in which she makes a real run at it? I don't know that much about her. Or is it just, no way, everybody knows who this guy is. He's got nicknames and tons of money and it's just not happening.
I take her campaign seriously. I mean, I feel more skeptical of that, those poll numbers, just based on experience, which is that, you know, Greg Abbott's like sole political trick, the thing that he really is good at, when in some ways he's not that good of a politician, is he is very quick to jump on people's anger in the issue of the day and blunt it, even if it's something that maybe he's sort of responsible for years ago. He's done that many times. It's been effective. A lot of Texans turn on the local news and they see him, you know, starting a new anti-gang task force or whatever. And he has been very effective at playing that angle. And it has kept him outperforming other statewide candidates in Texas on the Republican ticket in years where they have trouble. So in 2018, when Beto O'Rourke came within 3 points of beating Ted Cruz, there were some other Republicans under Greg Abbott who performed pretty badly, but Greg Abbott performed really well. Part of that was the bad Democratic candidate that year and the money differential. Greg Abbott has been very effective at selling himself to Texans as sort of being above the political debate and sort of a bipartisan candidate. I think for all of the reasons that we've been talking about, that advantage has bled away a little bit. And so I think you could see Gina Hinojosa make a really strong run. I mean, I would be shocked if she did, but I've been shocked before. You know, I'll just briefly add some of the other Republican statewide candidates this cycle could end up being in trouble too. The comptroller Don Huffines is like kind of a strange character who owns Jeffrey Epstein's ranch in New Mexico. I haven't seen that much yet, but I would expect to see a lot of ads on that. There are some other polls that indicate that the Republicans under Greg Abbott are maybe in a little bit of trouble. Beau French, who I talked about before, the Rhodesia guy, has a pretty respectable Democratic opponent who has gotten some endorsement from Republicans. I think Greg Abbott is in trouble. I think there are some other Republican statewide candidates that are in trouble too. And the national climate could mean that there are surprises in races besides Texas Senate.
Well, I love surprises, at least good ones. All right, Christopher Hooks, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. And thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of the Focus Group Podcast. We are going to be back next week, and we have some special book tour content coming your way. A lot of the book, guys, it's all focus groups. We'll see you guys next week.
This is Rick Burgess from The Rick Burgess Show. If you're still auto-renewing your car insurance without shopping around, you are probably throwing money away. I'm telling you, go check out Insurify. In about 2 minutes, totally free, you can compare quotes from over 100 companies all in one place. Now, here's what I love. Insurify actually monitors your rates and alerts you when prices drop, so you never miss out on a better deal. Millions of people have used it to stop overpaying, and there's no reason you shouldn't too. Do yourself a favor. See what you can save right now at Insurify.com.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of new items, like Honeycrisp apples for $2.99 a pound and boneless, skinless chicken breasts for just $3.99 a pound. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through November 4th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.